What up, everybody? Welcome to a new installment of the Big League Stew Podcast, the baseball podcast from Yahoo Sports. I am Mike Oz.
And I am Chris Swick.
We got that down, Chris. We are old pros now at the podcast intro.
It's only taken 7 episodes.
Is this 7?
I think this is 7.
Look at us, man. We are, I don't know when you become a podcast veteran, but I guess we would at least be free agents, wouldn't we?
We're in mid-season form, I would say.
Well, another good show lined up. Very happy to tell you guys we have an interview with David Price coming up for you. Very talented and also well-spoken baseball player. What else is happening on the show, Christopher?
Well, we got to talk about the Phillies, joining the 21st century this week. We're going to talk a little bit about the Home Run Derby, the new format, whether we enjoy it or not. We have to look at the Dodgers and specifically Yasiel Puig, and I don't want to give too much of that away in the tease, so that's all I'll say for that. And then Houston Street had some interesting comments about bullpen usage, and I think it'd be interesting for us to kind of dive into that a little bit.
All right. Is Jeff Passan on the show this week?
Not that I know of, unless you're going to surprise me.
Good, that guy talks too much. But we do have somebody who I would say is just as good, and that's David Price. And we talked to him a little bit about the Delta Dugout program that he's involved in, as well as a number of other topics. So I'm not going to make you wait. Let's just get right to that interview. We've got David Price joining us on the Stew Pod. Thanks, David, first of all, for being here with us. Today, we'll just get the business out of the way. You're talking to us about the Delta Dugout program, which we talked to Mariano Rivera about, too. But to you, what's the coolest thing about this Delta Dugout program?
Well, you kind of just said it. You know, I mean, if you're part of something or an ambassador for something that Mariano Rivera is a part of, to me, that is extremely that's very special. So, like you said, he's a part of it. You know, Matt Harvey represents the Mets. We all know what he's capable of doing out there on the field. And then John Smoltz as well. You know, he was definitely one of my idols growing up watching the game. And then Trevor Plouffe from the Twins. Just to be a part of something like this with four players of their caliber, you know, that's really cool. So, I definitely, want to thank Delta for thinking of me to be a part of this, and I'm very excited for it.
David, I know one of the big prizes is getting to hang out before a game. I'm wondering what it would be like if we get to hang out with you before a game in the Tigers clubhouse. Are things pretty loose? Are players kind of quiet and uptight? What's the atmosphere like?
Well, the things that I've seen today in our clubhouse, just today, and I tweeted a couple of them or Instagrammed one, well, Jobber's rolling around in it's not a solo wheel because it has two wheels. I think it's called In Motion. It's got a Bluetooth stereo. So somewhere in this thing, it has speakers that are very loud, and it's one of those things you put in between your legs and you hop on and you lean forward to go, and kind of lean backward to slow down or go backwards. And he's been rolling around the clubhouse from that. JD Martinez has a remote control cooler that is like a blue Pepsi truck that has drinks in it, and that has a speaker system as well.
That so time of year, right? That,
oh, he's been driving that around and, all day, blaring music, and we have a basketball goal set up in the locker room, not a Nerf one, but it's obviously not a real basketball goal. It has one of the little rubber basketballs, and we have a tape paint, and we have a free throw line, and we have the key and everything. So we play around the world. We have a lot of 2-on-2 tournaments, stuff like that. So we definitely keep it very loose in here, and I think that's the way to do it. We work extremely hard to get to this point in our lives and to be able to look forward to coming to the field, how much fun and how much you enjoy being with your teammates at the field. That just brings everybody closer. And, that team is going to be you know, on the field last, you know, celebrating after the World Series, I promise you that team is a very close-knit group of guys. And that's something that that you have to have. You have to have a 25-man roster that, that all has, you know, one common goal. That's to be the last team standing. That's what we're trying to do here.
Got to ask, who wins the Around the World tournament?
Tom Gorzolani's got a sweet shot. I can shoot as well. There's a lot of different games that we play. Around the World is one. They have a different game with kind of a one-on-one game where I guess it's 21 basically, but if I was to shoot in this and I'm playing one of you guys, you'd have to let the ball bounce twice, and wherever that second bounce, you know, bounces, that's where you have to shoot from. And you can play defense, but you can't block the shot. And, you know, if I get you to jump up when I'm trying to shoot my next shot and I jump into you and shoot it, that's a foul. So I'm going to go to the free throw line and shoot 2 free throws. And then you just keep shooting free throws until you miss. And it's the first one to score 21. And then we have a whiteboard right below the goal. And you write down the winner and the loser. And, you know, everybody kind of keeps tabs on how many games they've won and stuff like that. So it's constantly competition. And, you know, I think that's good.
You guys definitely find ways to amuse yourself. I guess on a different note, we're getting into July now. We're getting close to July. Is it nice for you not to have a bunch of trade rumors swirling around you? I guess knock on wood this time of year.
Absolutely. I was in that kind of situation the last 2 years of my career, and you know, I had definitely, you know, stated publicly that I wanted to stay in Tampa. You know, I loved being in Tampa. I love my teammates. You know, being with those guys for 6 and part of 7 seasons, and that's the longest tenure that I've ever had with any team or any baseball activity. You know, growing up in my life, you know, it was longer than high school. It was longer than college. It was, you know, longer than any summer team, you know, that I'd ever played for. So the bond that I had with those guys coming up through the minor leagues. And, you know, that was a very special situation, you know, what I had going on in Tampa. But, you know, being traded last year, you know, was very tough for me. But, you know, coming back with the Tigers this year and getting to spend, you know, those last 2 months with the team last year and then coming to spring training this year, you know, I definitely feel much more comfortable. You know, I'm more acclimated with the city. I know all my teammates on a personal level. You know, I kind of brought what I was doing in Tampa, and I brought it, you know, here to Detroit with me, and that's good. You know, I've got my own nicknames for all my teammates. You know, I've got some, you know, a personal story with all the guys, you know, different stuff like that. Whenever you can do that, you know, that allows me to cheer the way that I want to cheer in the dugout. You know, just to when those guys know that it's genuine and I really care about them and I want them to have, I want to see other people have success. You know, that's one of my things. Like, I love seeing other people do well. And to be honest, if a pitcher goes out there and just completely dominates us, you know, it stinks that we lose, absolutely, but I enjoy seeing that. You know, I like seeing other people do well, and, you know, I want my teammates to know that I care about them and I want them to be successful.
David, you were talking about pitching, you know, kind of knowing that you were probably going to get dealt last year. You know, this year you're set to be a free agent. I'm wondering if there's a big difference in your mind going out on the mound, kind of knowing that that's upcoming compared to when you were pitching, kind of knowing that you were going to be dealt.
No, I mean, if you think about it, I guess it's kind of the same situation. I mean, if you're pitching, you know, to be dealt before the trade deadline, you're showcasing yourself for, you know, the 29 other teams. And the same thing for if you're pitching during your free agent year. You know, this is kind of it's not a tryout for other teams or whatever it is, but it's, you know, I don't think about that stuff. You know, I don't think about being a free agent. You know, I try not to think about, you know, the trade deadline, but, you know, that was a question that I was asked pretty much every single day in Tampa by, you know, not our beat writers, because they understood that was a tough thing for me to talk about. So those guys, you know, didn't really ever ask me about it. It would be, you know, other teams' writers whenever we would go on the road, and I would talk to just the other teams' media people. But, I don't think about that. You know, I don't think about being a free agent.
Yeah.
You know, I want to live in the present. I don't relish on the past. I don't think about the future. You know, I want to be in the present. I want to have fun with what I do every single day, and I want my teammates to know that that's the last thing in my mind. You know, the only time I ever think about being a free agent is when, you know, I'm doing an interview and they ask me. You know,
reporters, and like, our apologies.
That's okay. I get it. You know, you get, it's part of it. You know, and a lot of guys don't get to 6 years in the big leagues. You know, there's a lot of guys that never get to be a free agent at all. So, you know, it's part of it. And, you know, I've worked extremely hard in my career to kind of be in the position that I'm in right now. And, you know, I'm extremely thankful for it.
David, one thing I've noticed about you on social media that I appreciate is I feel like you kind of talk to and congratulate other players on other teams for what they do well, as opposed to just kind of talking to your guys. And is that something that you do on purpose, or is it just sort of the fact that you have, you know, friends on different teams? I just think it's sort of an interesting idea.
I mean, this is a brotherhood, and that's the way I view it. That's the way I view it at Vanderbilt. You know, it's just being a professional athlete obviously is very special, but thing that I want to take away from my time, you know, being able to do what I get to do for a living is the relationships that you're going to make. You know, that's the relationships that I've made in baseball are far going to exceed, you know, my baseball career. You know, once I'm retired, these are the guys that I'm going to be, you know, talking to on an everyday basis or hanging out with or going on trips with and vacations and stuff like that. You know, that to me is what's special about baseball. You know, all the different types of people that you get to meet, the different cultures that you're going to get involved in, you know, that stuff. You know, it's life changing, you know, and it has nothing to do with the money and you know, the following that you can get on social media or just kind of the fame from it. You know, that's all a very cool part of it. But the coolest part for me is just to get to meet different people, to have different relationships, to get to know people on a personal level that you see, you know, on ESPN on an everyday basis doing really cool stuff in their sport. And to me, that's what I'm always going to take away from this game with, is just the relationships that I've been able to make.
We've kind of brought this up a couple times, but you're pretty active on social media, and you mentioned Instagram and Twitter earlier. We're not going to catch you getting in trouble with Major League Baseball for liking photos during games, are we?
No. I mean, that's a problem. I made a mistake, and you know, I kind of got ambushed by TMZ. You know, I don't even know how they knew I was, you know, at the Sports Illustrated stuff doing things with them. But as soon as I walked out, you know, he told me he wanted to ask questions about all my sneakers and, you know, the stuff, you know, about that. And then he asked me about Pablo, and I hadn't even heard about that yet. And I mean, everybody's going to go out to the locker room at some point, whether it's to get a snack, to get something to eat or drink, or to check their phone. You know, if they got to send a text message out, to you know, whatever they need to do. Well, that's very, very, very common. You know, that's nothing out of the ordinary. You know, everybody is going to do that. But I feel like we all have to understand, you know, and I mean, Major League Baseball has the rules. You know, you can't tweet or post anything 30 minutes before the game, or obviously during a game. And, you know, I think some athletes might not know, like, whenever you favorite a tweet or like something, or if you post a comment on a picture, you know, that's going to go to all of your followers. So that's, Pablo made a mistake, and we've all made mistakes before, and, you know, I'm sure if he could, you know, take it back, he would. You know, it was nothing that he tried to do to kind of start this whole thing. And I mean, I think it's just kind of in a snowball effect. You know, they're in Boston. I mean, they have a very big following for their team. You know, the media there is very, very big. And, you know, the fact that they've kind of struggled, and he struggled a little bit this year, you know, kind of all just, you know, kind of adds, I guess, heat to the fire, whatever that saying is. And, you know, he's going to learn from it. I'm sure, I promise you, he's not going to do it again. You know, he might still be checking his stuff, but he's not going to allow everybody to know what he's doing. And, you know, he made a mistake. He's going to learn from it. He's going to move on. He's going to be just fine. But, you know, that's part of it. And, you know, I think everybody's kind of going to they're going to check their phones at some point throughout the game. You know, yeah. I'm going to go send my girlfriend a text and saying, you know, what are we eating for dinner tonight? You want me to pick something up on the way home or whatever it is. You know, I'm going to text my parents or I'm going to come up and I'm going to check to see how Vanderbilt baseball's doing and stuff like that, or college football scores, or during the NFL season, you're going to run up and you're going to check your fantasy team. You know, it's very, very common. So, you just can't let everybody else know that you're doing it.
It seems like it's one of those things that people just don't really understand that happens, because you're not there. You know, you're just a fan and you kind of, you know, don't have that access. And along those same lines is sort of the next question I wanted to ask on a totally different level. But now that you play with Miguel Cabrera every day and kind of seeing him from the other side of things as a teammate, as opposed to a guy you're playing against, how in awe are you of just the way he is and everything he's able to do?
I mean, honestly, it's tough to put words to it. I mean, like you said, I competed against Miguel for 6 seasons, and I was one of the few guys, I'm sure, you know, that I had success against him. We always joke about it and talk about it. And I get to see him, you know, for 6 years, you know, obviously the highlights and how much fun he has on the field and how he's always, you know, joking and just having a good time. He plays this game like he's still 8 years old, and that's why he's so special. You know, there's nobody on the field that has more fun than Miguel Cabrera. And, you know, I had seen that whenever I was playing against him as, you know, a competition. But to be traded to Detroit and to get to see his act, you know, every single day in the clubhouse, and to see how he treats the young guys, you know, doesn't matter. He doesn't care how much service time you have. And that's beautiful, if you ask me. You know, you want those young guys to come up. You want those guys to be comfortable. Because if they're comfortable, they're gonna play better. You know, they're gonna feel better when they're coming to the field. You don't want these young guys, you know, being like, oh no, I gotta go to the field today, I'm gonna get razzed, or, you know, guys are gonna make you do this, guys are gonna make you do that. You know, Miguel looks at everybody the same, and I mean, he's unbelievable. I mean, he really is. You know, I really wish people could see how he is in the clubhouse and how much fun that guy has. I mean, there's not a right word to put on it, because, you know, nothing really does it justice. But he is, he's one of a kind, man. He really is. He really is.
David, we talked about your willingness to kind of praise other guys on other teams. I'm just wondering this year, you know, which opposing pitcher has really kind of impressed you when they've taken the mound against the Tigers?
I mean, it's obviously easy for me to say Chris Archer.
Yeah.
He's a former teammate, and with what he's been able to do, and just knowing, you know, kind of his maturation process over the past, you know, 3 seasons. So he's a guy that I met him in 2008 in Nashville. He was staying there at the time and, you know, working out and doing stuff. I met him at Green Hills movie theaters. He was walking out and I was walking in, walked over and introduced himself, and, you know, we kept in contact ever since. And then I had the treat of being a teammate and get to see how hard he works and how much he cares and how much he wants to be, he doesn't just want to change baseball, he wants to change the world. And, you know, that's pretty special. You know, a lot of guys in our position, you know, that are Major League Baseball players, you know, they want to do things kind of for themselves, and I completely get that. So a lot of guys come from different backgrounds, and Archer's background is very special. We have a lot of similarities in each other, and I think that's why, you know, I kind of gravitated to him so much, because I saw myself in Chris Archer. And, you know, he's been very special this year. Obviously, Sonny Gray, if he's going to say that, he's a Vanderbilt guy.
Of course.
But somebody else, you know, obviously Chris Sale, you know, seven straight games of 10 or more strikeouts.
Yeah.
And that guy is an absolute joke. But the guy that I would say that has been really impressive to me this year is Dallas Keuchel from the Astros. Yeah. An SEC guy. So I definitely love saying that. I'm all about the SEC. But, you know, he's not overpowering. You know, he's a lefty, and you know, he's gonna probably tops out at around 92, you know, maybe 93. I'm not really sure, but he he hits his spots. You know, he executes pitches. Matt, as a pitcher, that's what you have to do. You have to be able to execute. You have to be consistent. And that's what he does. And that's it's not an easy part to fish in, you know, with Crawford seats, you know, sitting right behind, you know, third base essentially. And it's for him to be able to do what he's done this year. And he definitely started that last year with the way that he threw the ball at the end of the year. And it just, you know, his confidence out there on the mound. You know, you can see that he's very confident. He's always locked in, and he's thrown the ball extremely well this year. And I tip my cap to that guy. And I love seeing fellow lefties, you know, throw the ball well.
I like that you appreciate the art of it and what other players do and stuff. I think that's really cool. I think last thing here, want to talk a little bit about the Tigers and kind of where you guys are at and you know, heading into July and sort of when things get going. You know, and I know you haven't been there for all these years, but, I mean, the Tigers are a team that have kind of been the, you know, expected favorite for so many years now, win the division all these years, and seems like there's some really tough challenge in the AL Central this year. I mean, the Royals are, of course, playing really well. What do you see as your guys' place right now? And is there a different mood, you think, knowing that, okay, we're not, you know, we're not heading into, you know, first place like easily. I mean, does it kind of put something back on your guys' back, or is it like, hey, well, you know, we know that when August comes, we can get it together and make a run.
Yeah, I mean, this the Tigers have won, you know, four straight American League Central crowns, and you know, we do feel like this is the toughest division in baseball right now. I mean, I think the last place team in our division is the White Sox, and that's their team is really, really good, you know, really good with what the Royals have continued to be able to do, you know, starting with last year and carrying it up to this year, and the confidence that those guys have out there on that field is very special. And then the Minnesota Twins as well. You know, they've got a very young group with very good veterans over there, obviously with Torii Hunter and then Joe Mauer as well. So those guys, they have that team headed in the right direction. But, you know, we're a very confident group, and we know that if we're in the mix of things, you know, come, you know, the end of July or middle of July, you know, Dave is, he's a guy that's gonna go get pieces to the puzzle that are gonna make us better, you know. And I think we all know that he's done that for quite some years now. And you know, we just need to put ourselves in a position, you know, come the end of July, that, you know, it's easy for Dave to be like, all right, we're gonna make this push and we're gonna go get guys that are gonna help us get to where we want to be. And that's what we need to think about right now. So we need to take it one day at a time. And you can't. I don't know how many games back we are in, you know, the Central or the Wild Card or whatever other, you know, races that there might be. But, you know, we have a very good team in this locker room. And, you know, just it's 25 pieces to the puzzle. And, you know, everybody just has to do their job. And if we do that, you know, we will be very successful. And I think we all know that.
Great. Hey, thanks, David. We appreciate you taking the time today. It was very nice talking to you. Very good answers. We really appreciate it.
All right, guys. No problem. Thank you.
It is the Stew Pod. Welcome back. Thanks again to David Price for spending some time with us and sharing with us all sorts of interesting information. Very, very nice to hear from him, Chris. Wouldn't you agree?
Yeah, talking to him was really great. I feel like we mentioned this a lot in the interview, but it's a lot of fun that he is willing to praise other players on social media. I really like that about him.
Yeah, I like that he's just like a fan of the game, you know, as opposed to like, this is what I do for my job, but like also, you know, hasn't dropped like kind of the fanboyness of it, which is kind of neat.
Yeah, I feel like you don't see that really from athletes or, you know, on social media especially.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about some news topics of this week, some things that are going on in the baseball world. I'm most intrigued by the Phillies this week. We've seen a few moves from them, one of which was, you know, Ryan Sandberg walked away last week saying that he was just tired of losing. So they have a new interim manager in his place who's going to be the manager for this season, but we assume probably not afterward. That they have they announced their new president, who's going to take over after this season, but not right away. And we have to assume that Ruben Amaro Jr. is going to get fired, because you wouldn't be bringing in a president and, you know, kind of just letting all this stuff be at bay if you're going to, you know, not just clean house. So I guess on two questions here. First of all, how awkward is this season going to be for the Phillies, just knowing that, you know, none of it really matters. None of these people have jobs. All these players could very well get traded. And then two, that's a whole lot of stuff to have up in the air. So what's it going to be like next year?
Right. Okay. So I think coming into the year, nobody really expected the Phillies to play well. And this was kind of going to be, I guess, a transition season. But now with all this stuff happening, you know, mid-year, it's kind of become more of an awkward situation. So with McPhail in as the president, he obviously is going to be making the decisions. Like you said, Amaro is probably in some trouble. The problem is, for next year, you know, if they want to turn this team around, everyone knows that they're going to deal Cole Hamels, and they're going to have to get a pretty good package for him. Seems like they're going to let Amaro do that, even though there's, you know, a better than 50% chance he's not going to be with the team next year. So you're depending on kind of a lame duck GM to make the best move. I mean, that, I don't know, that weirds me out a little bit. Unless McPhail is really going to be involved in that deal, that's kind of weird.
I think it's interesting that he's going to be just kind of hanging around and, you know, being a special assistant and just sort of, you know, nudging his way around. I kind of thought of him as being like the Bobs in Office Space.
Yeah.
Like he's just going to kind of appear like, Ruben, what are you doing with Cole Hamels? And, you know, I mean, on one hand, I think it's interesting for, you know, how are you going to do your job next year, getting some of the training and kind of knowing what's going on and learning, you know, who's expendable and who's not. And I think all that stuff is valuable. But at the same time, you do bring up a good point that, you know, there's all this stuff that really can determine some of the future for them. And I also have to think about the players and, like, do you just look around and be like, man, nobody cares. It doesn't matter what we do. You know, none of this, except unless you're Cole Hamels or Jonathan Papelbon and you're kind of playing to get traded, like, how do you go to work every day and even remotely try to care?
Well, yeah, that's a fair point, because you're playing for a manager who's very likely not going to be there. And then on top of that, the entire organization changes. So, like, you know, Amaro and before that, Ryan Sandberg, they had a certain valuation on a guy like Ben Revere. Well, if Amaro is out and some new GM is in, all of a sudden Ben Revere has to kind of be asking himself, does this guy feel the same way about me as the past, you know, organization? Or am I no longer valuable in the eyes of this team? So I think, yeah, I think that's definitely an interesting part of it.
I guess if you're, you know, if you want to go out there and just be the best you can and make yourself valuable and prove that you belong and whatever, great. But I also feel like there's part of the Phillies, they should just change their logo to like the shrug emoticon. Like that should just be their logo for the rest of the year.
Yeah, I could see how it'd be difficult to have motivation if you're a player for that team right now.
Yeah.
Well, all right, let's move on here to Yasiel Puig. He's kind of been in the news recently this week, because of a book that was written recently by Molly Knight, the Best Team Money Can Buy, it's called. It's about the Dodgers the last couple years and how they've operated as a franchise. And there's some stories in there about how Puig really irritates his teammates. And we've kind of heard, you know, some rumblings about Puig's personality the last couple years. And this kind of seems to add some fuel to the fire there. Our good friend Jeff Passan wrote a little bit about it. Kind of confirming that he had heard some of the same stuff. And so I guess the question is, you know, Yasiel Puig in public is a pretty entertaining figure. He does a lot of stuff that makes me laugh, and I'm wondering if this kind of ruins that personality for you now that we have gotten a peek behind the curtain.
Well, I also love Puig, so I'm obviously a little bit disheartened to hear that people think Puig's a big a-hole. But not like we didn't know that people thought that before. I guess it's just different people. You know, before we thought it was just Bill Plaschke and people who hate fun who thought Puig was an a-hole. But, I mean, I still think, you know, if your teammates don't like you, and they get annoyed by you, and you know they have some of these issues with you, that doesn't take away from the fact that he's still one of the most entertaining players in baseball. I think that, you know, he's definitely one of those guys who's worth the price of admission, who does interesting things, who's entirely fascinating, who's a big personality in a game that certainly needs more of them. So, to me, as somebody who is a bystander, who's watching the game, who appreciates, you know, the extraordinary moments, it doesn't change Puig for me. I mean, I guess it's sort of like what you see with some people on social media, where you're like, oh, that guy's kind of a, you know, like he's not funny or he's whatever. I mean, it not necessarily that he's an a-hole, but you kind of see some of these slivers of people that you didn't see before. So, like, Puig's an a-hole. All right, you know, no big deal to me, because there's a whole lot of other people who were probably a-holes that we appreciate what they did in the baseball field.
That's probably true. I guess I'm a little disheartened by it, because I think of a guy like Hanley Ramirez, who probably could have really, you know, made a name for himself as this great player in Miami. And I guess the problem there was maybe money and them keeping him around, but it seems like his attitude got him kind of chased out of that town. You know, almost the same with Manny Ramirez, where people really enjoyed him while he was playing, but I feel like, you know, his last couple years and since then, some of that has waned a little bit, just based on kind of what we know about his personality. And, you know, he also got chased out of Boston, so I feel like in that sense, you know, I don't want Yasiel Puig to go down that same path where we're talking about, oh, the guy is so talented, so great, but, you know, then there's all these qualifiers there saying, oh, he's not a great teammate, or his teammates hate him, or, but, you know, he's still young. I mean, I think he's only 24. I feel like there's still time for him to kind of mature and take on a different role. I mean, I don't think we can expect him to be, you know, a completely fully formed person at 24 years old.
And I think obviously, like, you know, my perception of it is different from somebody who just watches the game and writes about it and, you know, appreciates the good moments versus like a teammate. You know, they obviously have their own relationships and their own beefs. But, you know, as I read through Jeff's column about it, there were some really good stories about there in it, which I think a lot of them are relayed from Molly Knight's book. So I guess plug again for Molly Knight's book, because it sounds like it's really good. But I also thought of it almost like being a parent, and I'm going to use my kids as an example again. Like, my oldest kid, he annoys the crap out of me sometimes, but I still love him, you know. I still want the best for him. I still like to have him around, but sometimes he's annoying, and that's kind of how I look at it. Like he is, in some ways, you know, I've said that Yasiel Puig's a big man-child, but, I mean, that's kind of what he is, you know, and some of these guys who have been around longer, you know, kind of need to put him in his place, and they kind of need to tell him when he needs to shape up, and, you know, it's kind of up to him, obviously, if he's going to do it, but you put up with that because you put up with the talent, and just like I put up with my kid throwing fits because he's my kid and I love him, so, you know, I guess I look at that relationship like it could be very similar.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't have kids, but I'll just agree with you.
Wait as long as you can, man. Get all the sleep that you can, Chris. You this week decided to just take a crap all over the new home run derby format.
It's true.
And I applaud you for it, Chris, because I like it when you unleash the hot takes. For anybody who didn't notice or didn't see the news, MLB announced some changes to the home run derby format this year. They're doing brackets, and they're doing a weird thing where that you can add more time to your... Oh, okay, so instead of also doing a number of pitches, you get like 5 minutes to hit, and then to hit as many home runs as you can, and then you get extra time if you hit home runs far enough. It all seems very confusing, which I think is Chris's point, and I don't want to just rehash what you wrote already. So I think maybe a good question is, talking about the home run derby, you and I both have said we're fans of it. I enjoy it. I've enjoyed it for years. What's one thing you would do to make it better?
I would eliminate the brackets. I just really hate them. I hate the idea.
Well, let's not do that though. Like, what's something you would do outside of the changes? Outside of turning the changes they just made inside out. Like, how would you make the home run derby better?
This is a tough question. You've almost stumped me.
You let it decide home field advantage in the World Series.
No. Here's what I would do, and I kind of mentioned this in my article a little bit, but I would put like designated target zones in the bleachers or like out in the, you know, in the stand somewhere. And if you hit those areas, you get like bonus points, or you get an extra home run or something like that. I don't know why, but that's always been fun to me. Like,
yeah, it's kind of fun and silly.
I feel like they, I don't know, maybe this has been the Home Run Derby, or maybe this has been in other events, but they've had like trucks out there, like advertised trucks.
Yeah, like if you hit the truck, you win.
Yeah, if you hit the truck, there you go. You get more points, or, you know, two home runs. There you go.
Yeah.
Have some targets.
I mean, if we're going to go silly things, I think if they're going to do a time thing, they should have to run the bases. So you should have to run and then come back and then try to hit another one. I think that might, I mean, that's totally silly, but, you know. You know, putting in different props or different things you have to do, different challenges. But I don't know. I guess I like the bracket idea because I think people like brackets.
I totally see your point, though,
about how it you know drops out somebody who could very well make the finals because they got a bad matchup. I think you made a very good point there. But I've always felt like the bracket idea at least gives it a little bit of order, whereas in the last few years it seems like they just got so convoluted with all these things they were trying to do when it used to just be. Okay, the guys who hit the most home runs, then they face each other in the finals. And I guess my answer then would just be to go back to that. Like, just make it simple again. Just say, yeah. Okay, you guys are all going to, you know, have your number of balls. You hit them. Then the guys who hit the most home runs, they go to the finals and you do it again. And I just don't think it's that complicated. Like, you want to see guys hit the most home runs possible. That's the point of it. It's not, you know, all this other stuff. So make it simple. The guys who hit the most home runs win. Like, not that hard.
I'd also like to see some type of point system for the kids trying to catch the ball in the field because those kids are awful every year. They're terrible.
I want to see you go out there and do it and just knock over all the kids like you're Zach Campbell or something. Just
I would do that.
Get them out of the way. Yeah.
And then the good kids should be rewarded. If you can catch the ball, you should be able to go next year.
Oh, no, I just want to see you go full heel and just straight take out kids and just... You know, run him over, and
I will totally embrace that role.
Yeah, I think you should.
That's totally me.
I know it is.
I feel like we also need to talk about Houston Street here. Unless you had more on the Derby, I don't want to cut you short.
Go ahead.
So Houston Street yesterday, he made some points about bullpen usage. He talked to, of course, I can't remember the guy's name from MLB.com. He talked to a beat reporter.
Alden Gonzalez.
It was not Alden Gonzalez, but it was somebody who covers the Angels pretty regularly, so I apologize for that. And basically what Street said was he is opposed to pitching in innings other than the ninth if he is the designated closer, and he argued pretty vehemently for strict bullpen roles. He said, if guys don't know their role in a bullpen, it could pretty much lead to just complete disaster. And that kind of goes in opposition to, you know, some of the new thinking that the high leverage situations might occur earlier than the ninth inning. You want your best pitcher on the mound for that. Your best pitcher is often your closer. So that's kind of why it makes sense to use closers in maybe the seventh. Street seemed totally opposed to that. I'm wondering, you know, how right is he in your mind? How much do bullpen roles matter?
Well, I see it both ways, and I think that, especially from like an old school standpoint, I mean, I understand people want to be in the role that they're in, be comfortable in the role they're in, know their job, that kind of stuff. But at the same time, I feel like if you look around baseball the last few years, you should notice that the way bullpens are being used is changing. It can lead to great success. And ultimately, I think the question should always be, how can I help my team win? And if that's what's going to help your team win pitching in the seventh inning instead of the ninth inning, then you should be able to adapt to that situation. I don't know that you would make it in a lot of other jobs if you just said, well, this is what I'm going to do. Don't tell me to do anything different, because that's not how it's been, you know, for the last couple years. And I'm just going to keep doing what I'm doing. And if you don't like it, too bad. And they're going to say, okay, well, you're fired. And obviously baseball is a little different, but, you know, I do feel like if you talk to baseball players and you ask them what the most important thing is, the most important thing is always going to be winning, and it's always going to be trying to get to the World Series and win the World Series. So I just don't understand how, if you know that that's what's best for the team, and maybe it's not best for you and you know, your preparation or whatever, I just don't see how you wouldn't do it.
Yeah, I guess kind of reading what he had to say, I'm wondering how much of his comments were kind of motivated by money, because he gets the concept that, like, pitching in the seventh inning, if you have a one-run lead and guys are on second and third, that's a pretty high leverage situation. You probably want your best guy in there, and that makes sense. And Street seems to understand that, but he's still opposed, and I'm wondering if that's because, you know, pitching in the ninth and racking up saves is eventually what is going to get you paid if you hit the free agent market as a reliever. So in that sense, you know, I get it. Like, Street doesn't want to pitch in the seventh, even though, you know, he's probably needed there more, because in a couple years he's not going to be able to use that to say, hey, look, I saved, you know, 57 games over the last 2 years. I want to be paid like an elite closer. Because, you know, you're not seeing seventh or eighth inning guys get $40 million like Jonathan Papelbon. So I just wonder, it just seems like the whole obsession with the save has kind of ruined how we think about bullpens. You know, guys who get saves get paid. Guys, you know, that's the big stat. If you're a reliever and you can rack up saves, you're golden.
I'll give a couple, I guess a couple of counterpoints to my own argument earlier. And one of them, which, you know, Jeff Passan said on the podcast last week, he talked about how, you know, bullpen guys are such creatures of habit, and there's probably something about that that's important, and it probably does help them. But I think that we're not talking about, you know, every day you don't know when you're going to pitch. I think it's more of a, hey, you're our closer, but if we need you every once in a while, you know, in this really important situation, yeah, we're gonna go to you. And two, I think that give credit to Houston Street, because a lot of times when we talk about these things, you know, kind of new thinking versus old thinking, you have a player or a manager or a coach or a GM or whoever, and a lot of times it's people like us kind of saying like, oh, look at this guy. He does, you know, he's stupid. He doesn't know what he's talking about. And Houston Street at least was like thoughtful in what he said. So I'll give him credit for that. I just don't necessarily agree with him.
Yeah, I'm totally with you. I appreciate that he seems to understand the thinking behind it, even though I kind of think, well, I don't know. I do see it both ways. I was going to say I kind of think he's wrong, but I see it both ways. I think he definitely over-exaggerated what would happen if a bullpen or people in the bullpen didn't know their roles. He seemed to think it would just be a complete disaster and you'd have the worst bullpen in history. You know, I don't think that's the case. I think we've seen, you know, bullpens in flux the last couple years, and some of them have been able to get by without completely descending into awfulness. So I think it's possible. And I also feel like, you know, you're going to have one or two guys in every bullpen who really don't have that defined role. So, like, you're always going to have a closer, and then you're going to have, like, one or two guys who are probably set up, and then you're going to have a long reliever for sure. But that still leaves, you know, a couple guys in there who maybe they pitch in the sixth inning or maybe they pitch in the eighth inning. And, you know, they have to be prepared for that, and they obviously can do that. I mean, guys can do that. So I just think Street went a little overboard with some of his concerns.
Yeah, Chris, you call him out. You tell him.
It's not what I'm trying to do.
No, but I do agree in the fact that, you know, when you get to the postseason, we've seen where all that stuff just gets blown up anyway. So
right,
it's not like there's no precedent for it. It's not like the people don't understand, like, when it's the most important time that we, you know, use the most important player or the most, you know, player who's fit for the right situation. So, yeah, I mean, you might think in May or June, like, no, I want to stay in my routine. But, I mean, ultimately, I think we've seen the last couple of years how much one game can matter. So if it's just like a, you know, every once in a while thing, like this is really important. We have, you know, the bases loaded and Miguel Cabrera up and we really need you to pitch. I mean, I think it's being stubborn if you're just going to be like, no, I'm never going to do that.
Right. You should want to embrace that if you're the best pitcher on the club.
Yeah. Take the challenge, man. Take the challenge.
That's what I'm saying.
So we did something different this week, I think, or not first time we've done this. I let you pick the important questions, and you're going to ask me, and I'm actually kind of scared because I think I've probably made you uncomfortable a few times when we've done this. So I'm a little bit worried of what you're going to throw at me.
All right, well, we'll start easy.
And then, so you're saying and then I have reason to worry.
Well, you've made me rethink my order here. So we're gonna go out of order here. We're gonna say, if Mike Oz can only eat one thing at a baseball game, what would it be? What's your one food item that you have to have at a baseball game?
You know, I probably hot dogs. I don't eat hot dogs a lot, but I feel like it's something that I eat at baseball games for whatever
All right.
reason. You know, I mean, I'm not like a tremendous hot dog eater, but I just it's one of those things. I do love, there's a certain connection I also have with the malts they used to sell at A's games when I was a kid with like the little cardboard spoon. I don't know if they probably sell those everywhere, but to me, I always think of that as a baseball thing.
All right. Do you say RBI or RBIs?
RBI.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, no, that's no, no correct. That is the right answer.
Oh, hold on. What was Oh, no, do I say it? In what context, Chris? Hold on.
Well, he drove in three.
Well, you wouldn't even say it in that context, Chris. You would say he
had three.
What are
you talking about?
He had three. He drove in three runs, or he had three RBIs.
So you say you do it with the S.
If in the sentence he had three RBIs, yes.
No, that's wrong.
No.
It's runs batted in.
I know, but You're pluralizing a abbreviation. You're not putting the S on the I.
So basically, we're gonna fist fight about this. Basically,
yeah. This is not a baseball question.
This is
a journalistic style question. We can go consult the Yahoo style book if you want.
Yeah, we should
do
that.
Or the AP style book. I have an AP style book in my office. If you want.
Okay.
Do that.
Good. All right.
So you're vehemently on the RBI, huh?
Yes.
All right. You do have the, you know, honestly, when I said RBI first, I thought of RBI baseball. I was like, oh, it's RBI baseball. It's not RBI baseball. That's
all right. Let's move on here.
Okay.
Chris Bryant got into a little bit of a controversy for missing a game due to flu-like symptoms, and that led some people to speculate whether that meant he was hungover or not. So I'm going to ask you if you've ever called into work due to flu-like symptoms.
Never due to flu-like symptoms. I think that's totally a sports thing. That phrase. I would just say, you know, I don't feel good or whatever. Although my favorite thing to do when I would call in sick when I used to work at the warehouse, the music store back in the day when I was like out of high school and into college, and if I was going to be late, I would just call them and say I was going to be sick. And then
yeah.
They'd like freak out, and then I'd be like, "No, I'm just kidding. I'm just late. I'll be there." And they wouldn't mind. That's a tip.
That was your strategy.
That's a tip. Use it, folks.
Write it down.
Yeah. But
all right.
If I have flu-like symptoms someday, Chris, I'll let you know.
Good. All right, two more for you. How are you getting over the Benifer breakup?
Honestly, like I was just hoping that means that he's going to go do Mallrats 2.
Okay.
That was my.
Fair enough.
Main thing. Like, just go wild, man. Start doing Kevin Smith movies and hanging out with Matt Damon and doing dumb stuff. Although I don't know that Matt Damon, you know, is maybe as fun as I would like to think. I mean, I don't care. I don't care too much about celebrity couples.
I heard you were pretty heartbroken, so that's why I asked.
Who told you that?
I don't want to, get anyone in trouble.
Yeah, that's right. Nobody told you that. Nobody told you that, Chris.
All right, here's my final one. You have an extra second tonight, you know, because you get a leap second.
Do you?
Yes, you do. So at 11:59:59, the clock will briefly change to 11:59:60, and before it goes to midnight.
So, I didn't even know this.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, okay.
So how are you going to spend your leap seconds?
Sleeping. I'm hella sleeping, man.
Bad answer.
Huh?
I said, what a bad answer.
Dude, I was doing some baseball writing last night. I was up until about 1 a.m., a little bit after 1 a.m. The nights that I'm up till 1 a.m., I swear my kid wakes up at like 5:45 like he did today. So I am I'm just going on like a very little bit of caffeine and just going hard today. But believe you me, Chris, I am going to be sleeping as soon as I can. I mean, what could you do with an extra second anyway? You can't really do a ton.
There's not a lot.
There's not a lot. What would you do, Chris? What are you gonna do with your extra second?
I would pull one of those confetti popper things. You know what I'm talking about? Those little...
Yeah.
That's what I would do to celebrate the leap second.
I can't even send a text message to somebody in a second to say happy leap second.
That's true.
It doesn't
Well,
work.
I don't know what to tell you.
What is Yasiel Puig going to be doing in his leap second?
Probably annoying the crap out of somebody.
Probably pissing off Zach Grant.
But yeah, you will get an extra second of sleep tonight, so I hope you're happy about that.
Yeah, my kids will just wake up earlier, I'm sure.
Yeah, true.
Kids. I'm talking about kids too much on the podcast. I'll stop. I'll stop next week.
No, we love it. We love to hear family man stories.
No, you don't. No, you don't. Are you done with all your questions?
Yeah, you survived the important questions.
All right. Hey, I will plug something. I've started reading the book about the Major League movie. Have you seen this?
I've heard of the book, yeah.
Yeah, so there's a book. It's called The Making of Major League, and I started reading it the other day, and it's pretty interesting. I've written a lot about Major League stuff on the Stew. I obviously haven't written a book about it, but I'm curious to see how it goes. So just a plug out there for anybody who is into Major League like I am. There's a book out by a gentleman named Jonathan Knight, who is, as far as I know, not the guy who was in New Kids on the Block, but that would be sort of an interesting, like, second career if that was the case. But
yeah,
I don't know. Go check it out. And for you, Chris, if you like Major League, which if you don't,
I do.
You're fired. If
okay.
Not, so
I love it. It's my favorite.
All right. Well, I think we're done, aren't we?
I think that does it.
Is that it? Okay, subscribe on iTunes, everybody. Leave us a review or whatever. I think that's what... Do you do that on iTunes? You leave reviews, right? And like stars
you do.
And stuff? Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah,
so five stars.
Yeah, five stars. Do some of those.
Best podcast ever.
That's what you can do in your extra second. Just go click five stars.
Yep.
You can do that in 1 second. All right, this has been the Stew Pod. See you guys next week.
Walk a fine chalk line and put the needle to the grind. Representing one kind, see you're not for the blind. Witness what I carry on, bears a further purpose. From how we do slam a few, then you want to purchase. A dialogue of funk, you love to pop it in your trunk. I win more discipline than the Shaolin monk. Pete Rock and CL, well set to spark it. The powerful target to destroy the black market.